In Garner County, girls are told they possess a dangerous magic that emerges at 16, a power so threatening they must be banished for a year to release it. This grace year strips them of everything familiar and forces them to survive in a wilderness where poachers hunt them for their supposedly magical body parts. But what if the real danger isn't the magic girls possess, but the lie that keeps them afraid of their own power? What if the most revolutionary act is women choosing to support rather than destroy each other? This haunting dystopian tale explores how societies maintain control by convincing the oppressed they're dangerous, and what happens when one young woman begins to question everything she's been taught to believe about herself. The annual Veiling Day ceremony introduces gracier survivors to society and matches them with husbands. When our protagonist is unexpectedly matched with Michael, the community leader's son, she makes an enemy of Kirsten, who had expected this match for herself. Tension builds between them as their gracier approaches. In Garner County, unconventional women face harsh consequences. Our protagonist has recurring visions of a rebellious young woman with cropped hair and a birthmark, thoughts she must conceal. Before departure, her typically reserved mother secretly adds a red ribbon flower to her clothing, a small act of resistance that becomes significant later. The most chilling aspect of this society is its silence. No one discusses what happens during the grace year. Survivors return with unexplained scars, maintaining a conspiracy of silence that ensures each new group enters their grace year with only rumors and fear, precisely as the county's leaders intend. The 33 grace year girls arrive at a remote encampment surrounded by an electrified fence. Beyond lurk poachers who hunt them for their body parts believed to contain magical properties. After challenging Kirsten's leadership, our protagonist is banished from the group. Alone in the wilderness, she learns survival skills, distinguishing edible plants from poisonous ones, building shelters, and moving silently. She discovers scattered bones of previous gracier girls, some showing violence, others victims of exposure. The encampment descends into madness as girls turn on each other savagely. Our protagonist discovers the cause, hemlock silt contaminating their water, inducing hallucinations and aggression. This revelation prompts a crucial question. Have you ever seen them fly? Have you ever seen them do anything but die? The magic they fear is merely a lie used to control women. Despite its dangers, the wilderness becomes a space of liberation where she experiences true autonomy and begins to imagine a different future for all women. After nearly freezing to death, our protagonist is rescued by Riker, a poacher with connections to her father who secretly treats women and children in the outskirts. Their relationship evolves as he reveals shocking truths about the county. Your fathers, brothers, husbands, mothers, sisters, they are the ones who consume you, not us, he explains. The poachers are actually sanctioned by the county, paid to deliver the girl's flesh back to their own people with enough gold to escape westward. She's forced to confront the horrifying reality that the county's prosperity depends on consuming young women, a brutal metaphor for how patriarchal societies exploit women's youth, beauty, and reproductive capacity. As she heals, she and Riker develop genuine feelings. He teaches her survival skills and shares stories of his mother, who sheltered 6 banished gracier girls. Their growing intimacy represents a relationship based on mutual respect rather than ownership, allowing her to experience love as partnership instead of possession, revealing possibilities beyond the county's rigid structures. Returning to the encampment, our protagonist finds the girls starving and hallucinating from poisoned water, with Gertie nearly dead from an infected wound. Using knowledge from Riker and her father, she heals them with clean water, herbs, and food grown from her mother's hidden seeds. She cleverly exploits their belief in magic, presenting herself as a communicator with dead girls' ghosts to gradually replace the poisoned water without Kirsten's opposition. As they recover, they remember the atrocities they committed while under Hemlock's influence, confronting their complicity in each other's suffering. Their camp transformation becomes defiance. They scrub away years of fear, arrange beds in an unbroken circle, mirroring secret women's gatherings, and destroy the punishment tree. They convert its stump into a resistance altar adorned with wildflowers, daisies for innocence, lavender for peace, and solitary blooms representing individual strength. Their nightly spring ritual evolves into a ceremony of remembrance where they share stories of girls who didn't survive. By speaking these erased names, they commit an act of rebellion against a system designed to make them forget. Riker and our protagonist plan their escape to a remote island sanctuary, but rival poachers ambush them. Despite fighting bravely, Riker falls, uttering only, "Run," before dying. She flees through the forest, heartbroken, barely reaching the encampment alive. Rather than hardening from grief, she channels her pain into protecting the other girls. She realizes freedom requires breaking both physical and psychological chains. Their newfound solidarity becomes their strength as they prepare to return, no longer frightened girls, but warriors, sisters, survivors. Only 15 of 33 girls survive, the bloodiest grace year in history. In the town square, Michael stands before her with a gardenia. She reveals her pregnancy with Riker's child, prompting someone to throw an orange lily at her, the flower of hatred. During this crisis, she notices her mother revealing a jagged scar. She was the woman caught in a trap. Michael unexpectedly claims the child is his, and her Gracier sisters stand with her. Throughout the crowd, women wear red flowers, silent members of a resistance that's existed all along. Michael marries her, offering protection for her and her child. Their relationship evolves into a respectful partnership committed to change. He takes over the town's apothecary, dismantling the Gracier system by burning the toxic remedies that harm generations of women. She discovers a network of women secretly challenging the county's oppression. Her mother reveals the truth about mysterious gatherings in the woods during full moons, a resistance movement operating for generations. After a difficult delivery, her daughter is born with the distinctive strawberry mark from her dreams, the mark of the girl who proclaimed, "We are the weaker sex, weaker no more." She names her daughter Grace Riker Welk, combining elements of loss, love, and hope. The magic feared by the county isn't dangerous. It's the profound connection between women across generations and the revolutionary potential when women support rather than compete with each other. Through her daughter, she witnesses countless small acts of rebellion building toward liberation. The most dangerous magic is the strength that emerges when women refuse to be enemies. The real revolution begins with tiny red flowers passed secretly, with remembered stories, with women standing together. Not something to be feared, but nurtured until all are free.